Welcome to the Coffee and Code podcast, where we bridge the gap between technology and people through each informative episode. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, technologist, two-time TEDx speaker, and CEO of Coffee and Consult. On this show, you'll hear exclusive interviews with experts, innovators, creatives, and business owners in the tech space and beyond. Whether you're a novice or a tech enthusiast, my goal is to excite, inform, and empower you to understand how the rapidly evolving world of technology impacts your daily life. Let's dive into today's episode. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, and I'm really excited because we have a special guest with us yesterday. His name is Steve Goodgame, and he is the executive director of the KISS Institute for Practical Robotics. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Steve, you're a visionary nonprofit leader, and you've been nationally recognized in STEM education as an advocate for more than two decades of experience designing, scaling, and championing high-impact STEM initiatives for students and educators around the world. And as the executive director of the KISS Institute for Practical Robotics, we'll use the term KIPR, Kipper, yes, throughout the rest of the conversation,
please,
but we're referring to this. You've been doing this since 2008, and you have led the organization through some transformational growth by expanding programs across the U.S. and internationally, while also advancing Kipper's mission to empower educators and inspire students through hands-on autonomous robotics education. That in itself is an incredible background with a lot of impact, I'm sure a lot of stories. But I'm glad you're here, Steve. Welcome to the show, and please tell us more about yourself.
Yeah, so again, my name's Steve Goodgame. I grew up on a farm and a ranch in rural New Mexico. I was a cowboy, basically, and went to college and got a degree in agriculture and biology, nothing to do with tech or computers. In fact, the only thing around at that time was a mainframe and a punch card. I actually managed large agricultural operations till I was about 35 or 36 years old. So very different background than technology, right? It's old technology, horses and that kind of stuff. So I started teaching. So I got the wild urge to start teaching. So I started teaching science, mathematics at the middle school, high school level. Ended up teaching college level as well. And I was just amazed at how bad it was. How bad the textbook, the curriculums, everything. There was no hands-on inquiry-based stuff. It was just, read this and recite the information. It was terrible. So I started looking for things for kids to do, and that evolved into robotic programs, right? So, we did robots, we did rockets, anything you could think of with kids, I did, and took them to many competitions, many national competitions. That teaching career then led me all the way to the East Coast. I actually taught at the first charter school in Boston for a while. Wow. In inner city Boston, it was the same thing, right? It was no different from rural to there, is the kids had no practical ways to apply what they were learning. And that makes learning dull and boring, in my view. So the opportunity came up to come to Norman, Oklahoma. I'll be honest, I wasn't excited it was in Oklahoma, but that's where the job was, to run this robotics company that were doing autonomous robots. So yeah, we took the job, and my wife and I moved from Boston to good old Norman, Oklahoma, and we absolutely love it here. Since that time, since we've been here, we've helped expand the program. The program actually came out of MIT in 1994. The founders, Dr. David Miller, was a professor here at the University of Oklahoma. Was his nonprofit. I came over as an educator trying to help grow the program from just serving really high-end high school kids to maybe expanding it so more students could participate. And we've had really good luck with the BotBall program. BotBall, out of little old Norman, Oklahoma, we serve countries all over the world. We're all over the United States. We're in Africa. We're in Europe. We're in China. We're just everywhere. And it's just amazing to me that with such a small staff, the impact that we have with kids and teachers. Part of that then resolved, we wanted to do something with elementary kids. So about 10, 12 years ago, we started an elementary program to hit the K through 6 space, if you will, and started our junior BotBall program. That one has since expanded and has outpaced the BotBall program significantly. The China Globals last year, I think they narrowed it down from almost 80,000 kids doing the program to 15,000 at the competition. So it's just amazing the impact that we have. And again, this is all about autonomous robots. So not remote controlled robots, which most people are used to. They go to a robot thing, the kids are driving it, right? But We're not. We're teaching kids to write software, to write code to control the behavior of the robot. That's a completely different thing. And then the other piece of it is we do a significant amount of professional development for educators because we know that educators have the true impact on the kids. They're worth the kids more time during the day. They see all the kids. So it's important that these kids have an opportunity to at least access the technology. So that's what we do. That's what we do today. In fact, we just kicked off our season Saturday. Next weekend, I'll be in Houston. We'll have somebody in Boise, Idaho. We start training now every weekend. So, yeah.
That is so exciting. And that has such a transformational impact in all these students' lives because having that real life experience through the competitions, through team building, through working through problems with innovative solutions, these are really tangible life skills to have, especially in this day and age. So I'm really glad that you're focusing on that, Steve. And just looking at your background, you have so much experience that I can tell has informed where you are today. And it's really important to like help everyone understand that, especially those that are going into their career, to lead with what you're passionate about, continue moving, and then you'll get there. You just have to continue to be consistent. And I see consistency across everything that you've done across your career.
Yeah, it's interesting. I tell kids all the time, if you would have talked to me right out of college, I was going to be a rancher. I was going to be a cowboy.
Really?
That's all I was going to do. So you go from being a cowboy to, we actually do cooperative agreements with NASA engineers as well. So not only does the KISS Institute do these student programs, we also support real research like growing plants on the moon and developing drill bits, you know, in the Atacama Desert and Chile and all those kinds of things. So if you think about it from my background, you know, out in the country on horseback, maybe looking up at the moon, and now we're working on things that can actually be on the moon and do something. So I always tell kids, you never know where you're going to end up. Just you've got to do what you love and what you have a passion for, and that will drive your career.
Absolutely. And these are the things that are the powerful tools to help prepare the next generation of scientists and engineers and really creative problem solvers, which is such a high skill set to have in this day and age where technology is constantly changing on a daily basis.
Yeah, technology changes so rapidly. I mean, it's the only true benchmark, I think, is as you said, we need kids who can solve problems using whatever the tools are, whether it's AI, math, physics, whatever, software. They've got to be able to collaboratively problem solve. And to be honest, that's how we need to be teaching them in schools, too. We need to be teaching them to collaboratively problem solve using these tools. And that's, you know, typically not how it's done.
Exactly, which is why programs like yours are so important. And I want to kind of hone in a little bit. So let's zoom back in time to 2020. And we're in 2026 now. What kind of changes did you see in students at that point in time, which was so pivotal because we switched to online learning and then we're out of it? But tell me more about some of the things that you saw working with students and during this massive progression and acceleration of AI and new emerging tech just in the past 5 years.
Yeah. So it's completely changed. I mean, the educational setting is not anything like it was in 2020. I mean, with the advent of AI, things are different, right? So I see students now have an avenue to get a correct answer quickly. So instead of standing up and teaching them how to derive the answer, it's more important nowadays to teach kids how to analyze the answer they got and make sure it's correct or it should be applied the way they want it to be applied. The days of teaching of delivering information are gone. I mean, it's just incredible to me. And the other thing is it changes quickly. I was at a conference in Texas this past summer and they were making a explanation of how AI was not that good. So the person got up about 200 teachers there and said, everybody open your AI model, have it create an object like this. And I'll bet no one can do it. Well, nobody could do it, but I had a newer version of, I think it was ChatGPT. I don't know the latest version. And I did it and it popped right up. And it was funny because the presenter said, well, I tried it yesterday and that didn't work. And I said, yeah, but that's the point, is that this is not changing in weeks or months. This is changing in days and sometimes hours. Just how quick it changes, it just blows my mind. So with it changing that quick, there's no way without teaching kids, look, let's use these tools, use them ethically, use them correctly, know how to analyze them, work with them. That's the only thing the kids will have. because it's so quick.
So, Steve, very important to think about the acceleration of technology, and especially when it comes to the curriculum design. So can you kind of talk through how you've changed your approach to curriculum design just over the past few years in response to the rapid acceleration of technology changes?
Yeah, so our curriculum used to be a slide deck, just like everybody, right? Pre-COVID, it was a slide deck. Here it is, death by PowerPoint slide, right? Everybody sit and go slide by slide. Kill me now, another boring PowerPoint. So then we used to teach workshops, which we're teaching now as well, in that style. Everybody sits, looks at the sage on the stage. We go through the slides. We check for understanding, and they go. We don't teach that way. Now what we do is we get up and we say, guys, here's all the resources at your disposal that you can use to solve these problems. Here's the problems you need to solve in this year's game. You got two robots to do it. How you design them is up to you. Here's some other resources. Oh, and by the way, here's 10 things that we think at a minimum you should be able to do before you leave the workshop, which will help you be successful. Now, I'm not going to teach them to you, but if you want help, raise your hand and I'll come show you where the resources are. So while the kids are doing that, then we spend time with the teachers. And most of the teacher education is this: you don't know the answer. Your answer to it when they ask is, I don't know. Where did you look to find that? So what we're trying to do is, and that's not what we're trying to do. We've done it. We made the kids in charge of their own learning and empowered to solve their own solutions. And all the teacher does is provide the room and some guardrails on there and saying, hey, did you look here? Did you look there? If you want to use AI, great. If you want to use an LLM to look, if you want to look at Kipper's resources, great. If you want to go to Reddit and type stuff, I don't care. But you're using your tools to solve that problem. And this is important because a lot of other robot and a lot of other programs, it's still mentor-based. So the mentor comes in and it's basically, hey, I'm an engineer. Everybody wants to be an engineer. Be like me. Mm-hmm. Let me show you how to do it. Follow me and let me show you how this works. I mean, there was a big push to put lots of female engineers. So you have a female role model. It's the same thing. Be like me. Let me show you how to do it. Now, I love the role model aspect. I think it's great. But I think the model of, hey, be an engineer like me. This is how I do it is going away. I think with the advent of AI, you don't need all those specialties because you can have AI do it for you. And we're seeing that already. We're seeing smaller teams of companies that can develop amazing products and generate a lot of revenue and a lot of good stuff with a very small team without all these specialists because they're using the AI model to do it. Mm-hmm. You'll see the same thing in mobile. And so for us, we don't care what they use. We just want them to work collaboratively with their teammates to solve it. Does that make sense?
I love that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's my favorite type of learning, right? Because that's the learning that's sustained, that creates experiences. But more importantly, it creates that ecosystem to support that learning. And I'm glad that you're infusing that into everything that you do, because it's now more important than ever. And I'm curious, what are your pieces of advice to educators on being able to teach some of those aspects of thinking while they're teaching coding, design, and AI in the classroom?
Yeah, so it needs to be problem-based, in my opinion, or inquiry-based, if you will, and it has to be open-ended. You cannot have things that have a set solution. You know, once it has a set solution, it drives everything. That's where the mentors come in. You know, the mentors come in, oh, we're going to score the most points. This is the solution. Well, you can see that when you go to some of these other programs, because when you look at the things that place, let's say, in the top 10 in the world, they're identical. They're almost clones, and their strategy is almost clones. So somebody's come in and optimized that, and this is what it is. Okay. That's okay, but I mean, that's not what I want at all. I want kids to come in with 50 different solutions, not a one of them looking the same, and all of them equally doing almost as well, if that makes sense. And so the problem is then for educators is, how do you design it so that it's like, right? And that's hard to manage in the classroom. It's really hard to manage in the classroom where there's no known solution. It's like, you guys have to generate a solution. Will this work? Yeah, maybe so. Let's try it. That's the mentality that you have to have. And that goes counterculture to how we're trained to, you know, to educate. We educate, this is how you do it. You guys know how to do it? Great. Let me help you. Okay, here's the test. See if you can do it. See if I can do it like I showed you. Well, we're much better if we give them a problem to solve as a test that makes them use a whole bunch of things. So for teachers, it's hard to do. For administrators, it's hard to see. And AI, it just makes it even harder, right? Because they've got the answer in their hand. Mm-hmm. I gave the example to somebody. Well, it's actually one of my family members were complaining about AI. Said, it's going to ruin kids and it's too much information. I said, look, When I was a kid, I remember my parents bought a set of encyclopedias for the house. I was very fortunate. My dad was a teacher. My mom was a nurse. So we had an encyclopedia at home. Everybody else who didn't have it had to go to the school, to the library and look it up. We had an advantage. And then the internet came along and everybody got some answers in their hand. Were they always the right answer? No, but they had access to what was in their hand. That's kind of a levels the playing field a little bit. And I see AI to me, well, especially how it's being used now, mostly, you know, large language models. For most kids, think of it as a glorified search at the time right now. So, you know, they've got it in their hand where they can search and get the information and how to do it. What that does is that levels the playing field. It's extremely empowering if we teach kids how to use it. And I mean, in my mind, it doesn't matter now if you're in the highest tax-based property thing in Texas at the best school in the state learning, you could also be learning the same thing off an AI tutor on your smartphone sitting under a tree in Zimbabwe, if you wanted, because it kind of democratizes that knowledge. And I think that is super powerful. Now, the downside of it is you have to be motivated, right? You have to be motivated enough to want to learn and get that knowledge. Then, you know, compare that to now where they have to go to school, even if they don't want to. They have to sit there and they don't get to direct how they learn it or what they saw. It's just fed to them. It's not the same, nor should it be the same.
I agree. And I think the internet was the first wave of the democratization of access to information and knowledge. And AI is that second wave of this plus speed, democratization of speed and resources. Yeah. If you know where to look and how to connect the dots together, I think that's a really good way to help prepare educators. Design thinking is also a great principle to teach.
Yeah. And you know, the AI is really good at design thinking concepts.
Exactly.
It's really good at mechanical concepts. It's changed the field. Used to be a bachelor's degree in a tech field was the key to the good paycheck and the good life. It's not anymore. What's happened is it's raised the bar on the knowledge you have to get back to that entry point. And that frustrates me some because in this country, we're still teaching at the low level. And if the bar is raised, in my mind, that means we need to accelerate what we're doing at the bottom so we can get up to the bar. And we haven't done it yet in this country. I mean, we're still, and that's why I laugh, you know, in China and stuff, they get it. And there's more kids doing the program. And I go over there and these kids are competent in 3 or 4 text-based languages by 5th grade. And I come here and they're at a robot tournament and they're dragging a block around or driving a remote control and they think they're a STEM genius. And I'm like, you know, on the world stage, you're not. I'm sorry. We're actually way behind. And so,
I'm glad that you're saying that. Thank you for giving light to that, because it is a legitimate reality that we are facing. And it is up to us to help prepare the next generation of leaders and people that could potentially one day be our bosses. So we're doing a disservice to them if we're not equipping them with the tools they need to succeed in the future once we are gone. And a lot of that has to do with support to educators, administrators, not just time, but financially. I know in Oklahoma, there's been a huge push to try to equip teachers with some kind of basic coding skill set. You know, code.org does their yearly day of
code. Power of code. Yeah.
But it's not enough. It's not enough to equip educators with the tools that they need to succeed.
Right. And, you know, the thing is now the basic coding at that level, the AI does it really well.
Exactly.
It does it extremely well. Someone jumped on me and they said, well, kids have to really understand it before they use the AI to get the code because they won't know what they're looking at. And I'm like, well, okay, but let's think about spell check on a word processor for a minute. If you don't know how to spell the word and you misspell it, yes, it's going to help you spell it correctly, but you also realize you misspelled it because it underlines it. And it also shows you the, so it's teaching you how to spell as it goes. And I think there's real value to looking at some of that in an AI model, because you, if it's correct, then you see how things are done and you get a feel for how things are laid out or the format. I think there's real value in that. I think it's ridiculous to think that, no, don't use it until you reach a certain level.
Yeah.
And then you can use it, because kids are going to use it. I mean, you can legislate it in school, but when they get home, they're going to use it anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they should.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious, how are you equipping some of these students to be able to ask questions and validate whether or not the information is correct? Or are you kind of imposing that on them so that they understand that AI can still make mistakes?
Yeah. So right now we've got an AI tutor for our junior bot ball, which is our elementary to middle school age. It's got bumpers on it, right? So it's basically a glorified search. It's got all of our curriculum. So they can get in there and they can say, hey, how would I make my robot turn a sharp left turn or something like that? And the tutor part of it doesn't give the specific answer, but it teaches them. It leads them to it. It says, well, the turn one wheel goes faster than the other. Have you thought about this? So it doesn't actually give the answer. It leads them towards it. And then if they ask anything that's off topic, well, it doesn't answer at all. It says, hey, this is off topic. At the high school level, that's much harder, right? Because high schools, they're wide open. You know, once they get on their phone, even when, you know, if they don't have it in school, once they get out, they've got it. So there's a whole different set of problems there for the older kids that access it like that, mm-hmm. that need to be taught ethics. Currently at the high school level, we're using the AI tutor as well in the process of developing an AI camera. So the thought is not just have kids use it, but have kids actually learn how to program their own model or see how programming this model then, what is the TensorFlow or the convoluted TensorFlow or whatever that leads to that? What does that look like and how are the two related? So we're not about just using it at the high school level. We're about teaching them some basics so they can more understand it, right? At the elementary level, it's more of a prompt thing. Like, you know, what's a good way to prompt this to find the information you want? The better your prompt, the better your response.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. So it's no different than when the internet came out. I mean, you used to have Boolean and you have to type all these things in to get to at least narrow your search down to a few thousand pages. But yeah, that's where I see it now. I'm guessing probably within a couple of years, we'll have AI up and running on the robot itself, probably in real time. And, you know, it's interesting because in the world, there's a lot of people now are laughing. They're like, oh, you told us it had to be code, but code's a done thing. AI is doing it. My kids should be a plumber and a roofer and all that. Well, great. Those are all great things. They're good skills, great professions. But the robots are coming. Because with the advent of AI, the autonomous bipedal and humanoid robots have advanced. It's just amazing how much in just the last 6 months.
Right.
I mean, they're going crazy. I'm sure you saw the one on 60 Minutes with, you know, the new one out of Boston Dynamics, Atlas, the new Atlas. It's just absolutely amazing. I was in China last August, right after the World Human Robot Competitions, and I probably saw 1,000 different platforms, and they are really good. So will they be working on your roof? Sure. Will they be plumbers? Sure, they will. Will they do those things? Yeah. How far off is it? If you asked me 5 years ago, I would have said 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. But you ask me now, and I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure it's not 10 years. Or 12 years. I really think it's probably possible given AI and the advances they can make.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about. But I'm curious, for your Oklahoma Junior Bot Bowl Challenge and the Bot Bowl Tournament that's coming up Saturday, March 28th, can you talk a little bit more about that and a little bit more about what the heck Bot Bowl is for those that are listening?
Yeah. Yeah, so Bot Bowl is an autonomous robot competition, if you will. So everybody in the world gets the same box of parts. We want a level playing field. I don't want a team that has more resources to be able to buy better parts than a school with no resources. So everybody gets the same box of parts. Enough to build two robots. There's metal pieces. There's Lego pieces. There's a 3D printer. All the stuff. And then what they can use to build their robots is what's in the box. Or what they can design and print with a 3D printer with limitations. So that puts a level playing field on. Oh, it puts an engineering constraint, if you will, on what the robots can be made out of. And then they design two robots autonomous to compete against the game. This year's game is called Stack Attack. So it's an automated warehouse. There's pallets, there's loading docks, there's cubes they have to move around and stack. There's packing material. There's traffic cone. I mean, it's an automated warehouse type theme. And they get points by moving this to there or sorting this or matching or, you know, all those things. So what'll happen in late March, all the teams in Oklahoma, and actually some will come in from New Mexico and Texas as well, will be at the fairgrounds in Oklahoma. They come in and compete head to head. They'll show up in the morning. You get there about 8:30. They'll be practicing at 10 o'clock. We start. You'll see all these robots running. We run about 6 or 7 tables simultaneous.
Wow.
So you'll see them running and doing their thing. And then in the afternoon, you'll see them going head to head. And by the way, when they come in, adults aren't allowed in the pits in our program. Adults aren't allowed to touch the robots. Kids in the back, coaches over here. So the premise is it's what the kids can do as a team with the same materials that everybody else in the world got on an open-ended task. Now, concurrently, while that's running on each side, we'll probably have close to 1,000 elementary kids from the area that are running the Junior Bot Ball Challenge. Junior Bot Ball Challenge is not a direct competition. It runs on little mats on the floor. We use Coke cans or aluminum cans, water bottles as game pieces. So it's cheap. It's free. And then they have tasks they have to solve with the robot. There's no right, wrong, faster, slower, anything. It's just, can you solve it? And so we'll put up about 10 of those tasks for them to solve. And we'll put about 5 that they don't know what they are till they show up. And so those kids come up and then show how they solve the task. And it's important that it's not about the best, fastest, most. It's just, can you solve it? And so what we tell teachers that come there, if they've got 5 teams, let's say, and a lot of teachers do have 5 or 6 teams when they come in, I want to see 5 different solutions. I want each team to have a different solution. So what they're seeing is ways to solve a problem from different ways collaboratively. It's a lot of fun. We give them a little button that has the challenge number on it. And so I can tell by, it's basically an ability badge. I can tell by the button what skill level they're at on the programming side.
I love that.
Yeah. So it's just ability badge. It's, you need to come see it because it's not like any other robot thing you've ever seen. There's no screaming parents. There's no going for a trophy. Everybody's collaborative. Everybody's working together. There's robots and kids everywhere.
I love that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
I feel like we need more of that in the world right now, especially like that creative wonder, ideation, thinking without bounds and like seeing what could be possible.
Yes. Yeah, there's no doubt. And then the coolest thing is we run what we call a global conference on educational robotics. So we run a 5-day conference during which we do the International Botball Championships, the International JBC Championships. It will be in, I think it's the 3rd week in July. It will be at the Norman Embassy Suites. There'll be teams from all over the world come in, and it's free and open to the public. You can come in, and by the time they get to July 2026, the robots will be really good. I mean, the robots that come in from China and around the country will be phenomenally good. And when you come look at them, and you know, people walk in, it's funny, they look and they're small. They're like, oh, I see some Lego and they're small. That's not a real robot. They think a real robot's something big. Well, those other big ones, they're just mechanical cars is what they are, that they're driving with a joystick. They don't understand the difference between true autonomy with 2 systems is infinitely harder than driving a remote control car with a joystick. And the skills that you get out of that are not even in the same ballpark either, right?
Exactly. So, yeah. And we're like, just the concept of working together and working as a team is so important, because I see I teach at the university, I teach podcasting, and even then, those like Generation Z, I still see them like not wanting to work together. They want to work independently. And to me, like, that's part of the exercise is working together. Yes, it's easier to do things by yourself, but when you're working together, it becomes more difficult on purpose because you're working with different levels of ability, different backgrounds, communicating. And that right there is such a valuable skill set.
Yeah, it is, especially for the elementary. I mean, they get to see that other people's ideas have value and that, you know, they could work. No, it's a very interesting thing. And I think that's the future. I mean, people ask me, what should we teach kids? And I'm like, well, I've got a 5-year-old granddaughter. I truly think that collaborative problem solving, whatever the tools are, is probably the most valuable thing that could be taught, even more valuable than any of the subjects that they have now. I mean, I truly think that's the one skill probably for the future that they need. And that's why I'm really adamant about them being open-ended and not so top-directed of this is how you do it and do it like me, because you know, let's face it, if the engineers could solve all the problems we have in the world right now, there wouldn't be any problems, right?
True.
But that technique's not working. So maybe more diverse viewpoints and collaborative, we can come up with some better solutions. I see it in botball all the time. The collaborative teams have better solutions than those that don't. It's just a fact of life.
We just need to get you on a tour of the U.S. to talk about everything that you're talking here and help empower some educators to know that it is possible to get to the space.
Yeah, no, it's possible. It's just not the way teachers are trained or taught. I mean, it's a whole mind shift and a whole paradigm shift, really.
True.
It makes it hard.
So you have events all spring around the country. So those that are listening that may not be in Oklahoma, can you talk a little bit more about how they can get involved with these events?
Yeah, so you can go to our website at www.kipr.org, and you can see the events listed there. There's a place to sign up to volunteer. I think we run 13 U.S. regionals.
Wow.
Plus we've got the global conference this summer. So there's lots of opportunities to come in and help and do that. And just not that, just maybe bring your kids down and see what it's all about and see what's going on. Yeah.
And I love that the Junior Bot Ball and the Bot Ball Tournament that will be Saturday, March 28th at the Oklahoma State Fairgrounds, that it's free and open to the public.
Yes.
So there's no excuse for you to not be there, just as an observer, just to be a part of it.
Yeah, you can go see what the kindergarten girls over here are doing and then walk down a little bit and see what the high school is doing, all in the same building. It's kind of cool.
That's great. And I can't stress how important programs like these are right now. I speak with a lot of students as well, different ages from elementary to college, right? And this is like the number one thing that's being asked in the classroom is, how do we prepare for jobs? And I always try to help people think that there are jobs that don't exist yet. So like, make sure that you're not putting your brain in a box that's limiting it, because there's a lot of new things available.
Yeah. Yeah. The day of doing the one specialty, you're going to be in trouble, because if that specialty, if the AI does it better than you do, you're in trouble. That job will not be there.
Exactly. So, and the importance of human-computer interaction, there's always that collaboration, and that human in the loop is what will keep job security going, because we can't have AI without humanity. It's a two-way relationship.
No, it is. And I mean, you know, the comment, I think Elon Musk said it best. He's like, AI can be very smart. And it can be smarter than a lot of humans, but he said it will never be smarter than a smart human who knows how to use it effectively. And I think that's a really key point. If you're a pretty smart person and you've got a lot of background and you also know how to use that technology, you're going to be way smarter than the AI itself. So
that's
right. And that has value.
It really does, Steve. Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, this has been an incredible conversation, and I can't thank you enough for all the work that you do as an educator, as a leader, as just someone in the community who cares. We need more of you. Right. But where can people go to find more about you, your journey, and what you're working on so they can see what's...
So you can go to our website at www.kipr.org. You can look me up on LinkedIn. It's just Steve, last name. I know it's a weird last name. Good game. Like, you played a good game. You can find me on social media. You can find me on Facebook. I'm old school. You can find me on LinkedIn. And you can also you can email me. You can find the email on the webpage and reach out to me. I'm always happy to talk to anybody that's interested in empowering their students to do what we do. So.
I love that. And I'll be sure to link all of that in the show notes. That way, those that are listening can just immediately interact and get to those resources that you mentioned, or save the date for March 28th. If you're listening in Oklahoma, I will try to make it myself. Love to see what's going on and be in that energy of creativity, innovation, and working together.
Yes, it'd be great. We'd love to have you.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for coming on Coffee and Code to share more about the importance of robotics and the importance of the community and the importance of teaching these skills to the next generation of leaders. You're amazing, and would love to have a part two, maybe after your Bot Ball tournament, to talk about how much has changed since the last time we talked.
Which will be a lot.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Coffee and Code. Your support means everything, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more insights, updates, and behind-the-scenes content. Stay curious, stay informed. Until next time, stay hydrated, and do something nice for someone.